We present Bright Day by J.B. Priestley, dramatized in 6 episodes by Eric Pringle. Episode 3. The year is 1945. Successful screenwriter Gregory Dawson is trying to finish a film script for the actress Elizabeth Earle. As the hotel trio plays a selection of music that reminds him of his youth in the northern town of Brudersford in 1912, he finds himself remembering also the Allington family, and in particular their daughters, Joan, Eva, and Bridget.
It's lovely in here, isn't it? Cozy. So tell me, darling, what happened after your magic boxing night when those girls cast their spell on you? Did the spell last? Was everything a fairy tale?
Not entirely. I didn't see the Allingtons again for ages. Then at Hawes and Company, there was trouble with a new German agent who'd been appointed by London against Mr. Allington's advice. But when he had to go to Germany to sort it out, he gave me his ticket to the pantomime.
You must join us for supper afterwards.
That's jolly decent of you, Oliver.
Well, we are jolly decent.
They're mad, actually, aren't they, Ben?
As hatters in a hurricane, Eva.
Hatters or slumpumpeter.
Shh, it's starting.
Shh, it's starting.
Shh, it's starting.
Idiots.
Sitting secure and snug in the dark with that family, I was half inside the Cinderella fairy tale. I felt that this extraordinary life had always been waiting for me. That a secret door had opened, and I walked straight into it.
It's been a terrible day. I say it's been a terrible day.
And I felt enriched. Suddenly, great stories and dreams were waiting for me to write them. And life was fruitful and good, and forever to be trusted. And afterwards, on the tram at supper, planning with Oliver and Bridget. It seemed I was almost one of the Allingtons at last.
It's been a terrible day.
Oh, I say it's been a terrible day.
Gregory, did you see Cinderella's
legs?
Did I
not? Oh, Baron, you mustn't look up there.
I saw a good deal of the Allingtons after that. Through Ben Kerry's influence, I had some humorous sketches of Brudersford life accepted by the Evening Express, which even impressed Bridget. Then at last, spring arrived. The Moors waited at the tram terminus. Beyond the last mill chimney, skylarks rose and sang. Tracks were springy underfoot, and if you were lucky, blue summer was waiting. It was there on a May Sunday when I hiked with Jock Barnaston up to Bullsden on the edge of Broadstone Moor, where the Allingtons had rented 2 stone cottages.
What a morning, Jock. It's going to be grand. Woolston all day, then back to the Allingtons this evening. Perfect.
My sister's a bit gloomy about it, you know. She says it'll end badly.
Your sister? Today? What did she mean?
Well, you must have heard about her. People say she's peculiar, but they don't know her. She's an invalid, and she has a kind of second sight.
Does she? Is she always right?
Usually. She says something unexpected will happen today, and no good will come of it.
But it's lovely. We're going to the Allingtons.
Don't say anything to them, will you? Just forget it. Now, how are Hawes and Company?
Oh, a bit boring. I won't stay long there, Jock. I want to write.
So you ought. But don't be in a hurry to run away. I know Ben Kerry's talking about going up to Fleet Street.
Well, Ben gets everything he wants. Well,
it depends what you want to write. It's easier to write what you want in a wool office than working on a newspaper.
Do you think Mr. Allington was right to stay in the wool business?
I don't know. I think he'd have been happier as a teacher. I'm not sure he's tough enough for the wool business. You know, Gregory, behind all its bonhomie, there's a battlefield. That's one reason I've kept away from it. I don't like battlefields.
I wonder. Had Jock's sister foreseen the coming battlefield her brother would not be able to avoid? And his Victoria Cross? And his death?
Toughness isn't everything. And the Allingtons...
You mustn't care too much about the Allingtons, you know.
Why? I haven't been making a fool of myself, have I?
Don't worry. Nobody's been laughing at you. Tell me, Gregory, what did the Allingtons mean to you when you first saw them?
Three good-looking girls. Mysterious, magical circle on the tram. I had to be part of it.
That's what I thought. You were lonely and miserable with no real family of your own. Then you saw the Allingtons. Well, don't let it be more than that. Magic shouldn't come in with people.
Has to come in somewhere.
The Allingtons are an amusing, clever, charming family. I'm fond of them all. But for your own sake, don't turn them into something they wouldn't pretend to be. Don't make everything stand or fall by them. Switch off the enchantment. It comes from you. See what I mean?
No. Just I'm being warned about something.
Travel lightly. That's all. Look, there's a white horse. Let's have a beer.
Jock, lad, over here.
Stanley, hello. Here, meet Gregory Dawson. Oh. Gregory, this is Stanley Mervyn, the artist.
Gosh, I've seen some of your paintings at the Allingtons, Mr. Mervyn. They're fantastic.
We're on our way to the Allingtons now.
So, my lads, have a pint with me, then we'll be off. Let me show you something first, though. I've been out since early on having a go at that little bridge at Broadstone Beck End. If I've had one try at that little beggar, I've had a dozen and never got bloody tone right. But I fancy this time I've rung the bloody bell. Have a look, lads.
Oh, it's beautiful, Mr. Mervyn. It's this morning, caught forever.
Gregory Dawson, eh? Haven't I seen some little pieces of yours in Brothersville Express lately? They're not bad at all.
Oh, thank you.
Only look, lad, don't try to be a clever dick like Ben Kerry. I reckon in a year or two, if you'll just keep it straight and simple, you'll be knocking spots off him. And which of them three Allington lasses are you gone on?
I've been wondering that myself.
All three. But Joan's older than me, and Eva's already spoken for.
And that leaves young Bridget. Well, she's best of the three to my mind. I'm saying nought against the other two, but Bridget's got most in her. You'll see. She'll like this I've just done.
Hurry up, you slow coaches. Lunch is ready.
Coming, Bridget. Here I am.
There's no need to look so jolly smug about it. Oliver's at Cambridge. Ben's working, but he'll join us at home tonight. Everybody else is here, including Mrs. Mervyn. She never stops laughing.
War among the great powers is very unlikely, Stanley. Nobody's foolish enough to hurl millions of troops, thousands of guns, scores of battleships.
What are they there for, then?
To frighten the nations into keeping the peace.
Don't tell me that. Stands to reason, with all that stuff ready to go off, somebody will pull the trigger one of these days. I think you're kidding yourselves.
What do you say, Jock?
I say we're wasting a grand afternoon.
Hear, hear. Who wants to talk about fighting?
What about a walk over the moor?
Cricket first. Father and I choose sides. Bags I, Gregory.
Bags you all help clear away.
Oh. What a day this has been. That picnic.
That lovely sunshine. Paddling in the stream. Bread and jam.
Laughing girls.
Joan's happy now, look. She has Jock all to herself.
Does she want Jock all to herself?
Of course, she adores him. Ask Bridget.
Gregory knows nothing. He's an ignoramus and he's cocky about it. Dad, perhaps we have some music as soon as we get inside. I've dragged Dorothy all over the place with her cello, so you've jolly well got to make up the trio.
All right, we'll do the Schubert.
I was just about to suggest we add some music. Just right to round off the day.
Oh, there's Ben waiting at the gate. Ben!
Gregory, you can be rather awful at times. Sometimes you're nicer than any of the other chaps who come here.
When am I awful?
When you pretend to be clever and go all pompous. You're only a year older than me. But you really care about music. I've watched you.
I've never seen you watching me.
Oh, I've had my eye on you. Did you know I might go to Leipzig next year? Daddy's almost persuaded. I'll ask him again after the Schubert. If he says yes, that'll make the day perfect.
Then I hope he does. Bridget, this has been a wonderful day for me.
You haven't finished it yet. Here we are. Home. Oh, Lord.
What's the matter?
Gregory, why can't we hold on?
Hold on?
Why can't we say, this is what we want, this that we have now, and we'll hold on to it and we won't have it changed by anybody. Tell me.
Bridget.
We can't, can we? We can't!
I don't know what you mean. What do you want me to do?
Nothing. Nothing, I'm just talking rot. Come inside.
Ladies and gentlemen, by special request, Schubert Trio, B-flat major. Violin, Miss Bridget Ellington. Cello, Miss Dorothy Sawley. At piano, myself, Johann Ellington. Your attention, please.
We were all in the long drawing room, three playing, the rest of us listening, joined together by the music. I was where I had so often wanted to be, magically encircled and fathoms deep in contentment. Suddenly, there were two strangers in the room.
What the devil?
Who's that?
Nixie. Look, Mr. Ellington, I'm frightfully sorry. We rang, but couldn't make you hear.
We thought you'd like to know we'd arrived at last.
Well, come in, come in. Welcome, and let me introduce you. Gather round, everybody. Meet Malcolm and Eleanor Nixie. Malcolm's come from London office to work with us for a time in Canal Street.
Mr. Nixie, how nice to meet you.
Now, why don't you come to say, how dare they barge in on us?
I was inside your music. They've destroyed it.
People from the big city descending on little us. Look how she's joking with Ben already. He's dazzled by her.
Well, she's rather handsome.
Men are disgusting. Look out, he's coming over.
I say, wouldn't you like to go on with your music?
It doesn't matter, there's no point now.
You're Gregory Dawson. Well, Dawson, we'll be learning the wool trade together, eh?
Go on, Greg.
They were polite and anxious to please, but they'd smashed our day to smithereens.
And that's what began this?
It may not seem much now, but living it then, and later, she remembers, Eleanor.
How do you know?
I met her on the cliff. Lady Harndine, Eleanor Nixie, with a stick and 30 more years on her back. The same woman.
I'd interrupted you, Mr. Dawson.
I was thinking about you, actually. About that evening in May 1913, when you and your husband burst in on the Allingtons during a Schubert trio.
Oh, the Allingtons. Yes, let me think. I do seem to remember our calling on them. But everybody in the hotel is excited about your film people coming. Who are they?
Elizabeth Earle and George Adeney.
Oh, I've seen her on the silver screen.
I'm not surprised. She's a great star in Hollywood now. She's come back to England to play the leading part in this film I'm writing. George Adeney will direct it.
What was I wearing that night?
Good God. I've no idea.
One of those absurd picture hats. A black crepe de chine hobble skirt and a cream georgette jabot. Very grand for Brothersford.
Yes, Lady Harney. I'm sure it was.
And then I arrived, and you didn't want to see me.
I was working on the script, Liz. For you.
Greg, darling.
Liz, how lovely.
What was I wearing?
A grey travelling outfit and a pale yellow scarf. You look beautiful and in glorious technicolour. And you kiss me as if...
Don't say anything. Let me look at you. You're thinner, Greg.
It's the rations. And I'm not drinking as much.
And greyer, too. It suits you. How do I look?
A shade more mature.
Better than ever.
This is a nice, silly English sort of hotel, isn't it? My room's underneath yours, you know. We have a little staircase all our own. If I hear you awake in the night, I can come up and talk to you.
Be careful of your reputation.
Shut up about being careful. Have you been careful?
I haven't even had to think about it. I'm here to work.
Brent told me. How are you, darling?
I'm glad you're here, Liz.
You didn't much care before, did you? I knew. I was terribly disappointed and hurt.
I'm sorry. It's just when I come to a place like this to work, I don't talk to anybody. I sink deep inside myself. Takes me time to come up again.
You needn't explain. It's all right now. I must go and change for dinner.
I think I am angry with you, Gregory. You should have told me.
Told you what, George?
That Elizabeth Earle is in love with you.
Nonsense. Liz and I are old friends.
You realize it is important for me to know. I have to direct this picture, and it is Brent's biggest commitment. Miss Earle is a great star. You write the script. If you and
you needn't draw a map. I tell you, we aren't like that. Back in 36, Liz was spotted in the West End by Melfoy, the Hollywood agent, shipped her off to the coast. Studio gave her a couple of bit parts and then didn't want her. George, when they don't want you over there, you wonder if you've got leprosy. Mm. I gave her a lot of advice. Introduced her to people. And then I went over to Sam Grumman and I argued with him into taking her up. I wrote a part for her. She stole the picture. The rest is history.
But that is not the end of the story.
No, she married Terry Black, who she starred with in Yellow Roses. It didn't work out. I did what I could to help her through a bad time. Packed her off to a ranch out on the Mojave Desert. I used to go and stay with her. And then I arranged with Sam Grumman to write a script especially for her.
That was The Lonely Huntress?
Right. It bought her an Oscar and a terrific rating. Then the war came. As soon as I'd worked out my contract, I came back to England. I didn't see Elizabeth again until this evening. We've been writing to each other, though. Ah, there's the dinner gong. Elizabeth will be joining us.
Oh, where's Jake West?
Jake is being a good publicity man. There are some people here he knows. He is charming them. Ah, here is our star. Let us eat. Observe the ladies and gentlemen at their tables, Miss Earle. Their hands are shaking and they are spilling their dreadful soup, all because of you.
Really? I was just thinking how nice it is when there's no fuss.
This is England, that is all. There is a terrible fuss here tonight. The power of movies. It is frightening. Gregory, you imagine Miss Earle is simply a good actress with a beautiful face and figure, easy to photograph? It is not so. She is a magical image in the world's dream life. Excuse me. Jake!
You look as if you're having a wonderful time.
I am. The script's grand and it's such fun being here. What's the matter?
Nothing, really. I'm a bit stale. You're so happy and radiant, it makes me feel old and done for.
Greg.
I'm just tired.
Then why don't you go up and rest? Jake wants me in the lounge afterwards to meet some people, but I won't stay long.
All right. You go on. Impress them.
I did, didn't I?
You were like a queen holding court with Jake wheeling up the fortunate few to be presented, including the Hardys.
Two giant sticks. They seemed shallow.
They always lack something. Emotion, sympathy, humanity. A whole dimension. You know, watching them with you, they looked so ordinary. Once they seemed extraordinary to me.
I saw your face, Greg. You looked so desolate.
Time was playing tricks. I felt desolate.
You walked away.
I went up to my room. Seemed like a refuge for lost travellers. And while you held court with two dry sticks called Harndean, I went back to 1913, where two smart people called Nixie stood in the Allington's doorway, like sticks of explosive primed to blow us all away. Most of his first few months at Hawes and Company, Malcolm Nixey worked in the office with Croxton. I rather liked him at first. Had a metropolitan air. He was very friendly.
Look, Gregory, old man, I didn't quite get the hang of what Ackworth was saying. Tell me, what is it all about? Do you mind?
One night I went back to Canal Street for a book. I thought it would be empty. But Nixey and Croxton were huddled there like conspirators.
What the devil do you want, Dawson?
Mr. Croxton,
bursting in here?
I didn't. I only
came. Get out!
It's all right, Dawson. I'm at a loose end, so I was telling Mr. Croxton a thing or two about the city. We were just leaving. You doing much this evening, old man?
I haven't decided yet.
What about having a bite of dinner with me? Then we can go to the music hall. My treat, of course.
Gosh, thanks.
That's the style. Come on, then. Night, Croxton, old man. I've told the waiter to telephone for two stalls for the second house.
Telephoned? Cracking.
Food's not bad here, is it?
Oh, it's grand. I can't afford places like this.
What do you think of Brothersford?
I like it. I like the people.
And Hawes and Company? You and I aren't really part of it, are we? So we can take a broad view. What about Ackworth? He's the sort of chap who'd never have a chance in a London firm.
Oh, but he's one of the best-known men in the wool trade. That roughness is just put on.
He can't stand me. Don't know why. I haven't done him any harm.
Oh, it's just his manner. He's all right when you get to know him.
Croxton knows him, and they don't get on.
Well, Ackworth thinks Croxton should stick to his job as cashier and not interfere with the wool end. We've had rows about it.
Croxton's a pretty smart chap. If you ask me, I don't think it's fair he should be kept out of the sample room and not given more of the real business to do.
But
I won't hesitate to mention it to Allington if the subject comes up. I've an idea competition's getting keener in this business, especially on the exporting side. So it needs fellows who are keen to run it. Allington's all right, a decent chap, but is he keen enough? I don't get the impression he's pushing the business on. Quite the opposite, in fact. Very much between ourselves, of course.
Right.
Time we went.
Aye. How is Mrs. Nixey?
Flourishing. She's out somewhere. The theatre, I expect. She's gone with that newspaper chap you know, Kerry.
Ben Kerry?
Yes. Why not?
Why, he's practically engaged to Eve Allington.
Is he now? She's rather a knockout, that one. Well, let's hope the Allington kid won't be jealous. That might put Eleanor's back up.
Afterwards, I remembered that laugh. I remembered how at the music hall, Nixey never lost himself in it. He just stared, detached and wanting to leave early. That's when I realised that most of Nixey was always somewhere else. That summer, most of the Allingtons were away for the holidays. I went to Silverdale with my uncle and aunt and their friends, the Blackshaws. I remember there was a little Blackshaw girl called Laura who was very solemn and fierce. She followed me about and tried to bribe me with sticky sweets, made me play Ludo with her on wet afternoons. She was no substitute for the Allington girls. Then one September afternoon in Canal Street, I was running up the stairs.
Look out, you chump!
Bridget! You're back!
And you're at it again, telling me things I know.
Your father isn't in.
I haven't come to see him, it's you. Listen, you remember that queer man who played the piano, Mr. Leek?
Oh.
Oliver and I are going to his house tonight, and I'm going to play, and we thought you might like to come. You needn't if you don't want.
I'd love to.
For heaven's sake, stop grinning. Here's the address. 8:30. We'll see you there.
Bridget! Oh, Bridget. My green-eyed gypsy.
How do, how do? I hope you're in fine fettle, young woman, because I feel like giving you a doing tonight. Get fiddle out, lass.
It was after midnight when we left, full of coffee and beer and cake in Yorkshire Parking and dizzy with music. We walked home, the three of us, down from the glen with the streets to ourselves. We seemed to expand, take up the whole of the road.
Oh, I shall have a year in Leipzig, then Odessa, then Brussels.
Yes!
Oh, and then then I shall come out and shake the world.
You will, Bridget, and I'll write everything that can be written better than anybody ever.
And I shall be an editor and a publisher. Slump! Pumpeter! Oh, I shall do such things. We all shall. Look at the stars, souls.
Oh, look.
Life, souls. Life. You either take it or reject it. Plenty of people reject it. We know dozens of them. But I take it. I accept it. The whole damn tangling, tingling business. Oh, I tell you, stars. You're bloody wonderful! Shlump Pumpeter!
Shlump Pumpeter!
Shlump Pumpeter!
I never saw Oliver like that again. There wasn't much time. Things went wrong too soon for the Allingtons, and then, only a year later, he and I were both in the army and miles apart. And then Oliver was killed. Near Givenchy. Towards the end of May, 1915.
Shlump Pumpeter!
In episode 3 of Bright Day, David Hargreaves played the older Gregory Dawson, Peter Kenny, the younger Gregory, Francis Jeter, Elizabeth Earle, and Steve Hodson, Ackworth. Gareth Armstrong played Mr. Allington, Elaine Claxton, Joan, Tara Dominic, Eva, Teresa Gallagher, Bridget, Paul Panting, Oliver, Richard Pierce, David, and Tina Gray played Mrs. Allington. David Jarvis played Nixie, Susanna Corbett, Eleanor Nixie, Margaret John, Lady Harndine, Gavin Muir, Mervyn, Peter Whitman, Croxton, Dominic Letts, Ben Kerry, Malcolm Ward, Jock Barniston, and Tom Bevan, Herbert Leeton. Music was played by Les Brown, Lawrence Rossi, and Tony Gamage. Bright Day is dramatized in 6 episodes by Eric Pringle from the novel by J.B. Priestley and is directed by Adrian Bean.